Welcome to Nuanced Judaism, coming to you from OU Torah.
I'm Simi.
And I am Rivka. Hi.
Hi.
Okay, welcome back. We took a break over the summer, but now in preparation for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, here we are.
Okay, so Rivka, if you had to present an idea, it's coming up to the high holidays, people are in that sort of mode, that sort of framework.
Starting to be, yeah. So this is actually one of two ideas that I presented both in Jerusalem and in Tel Aviv. And the reason why I like these two ideas is because, well, first of all, they were inspiring to me, but also because of their vagueness. What I mean by that is that if somebody tells you how to grow in a very specific way, unless they hit the nail on the head, which is highly unlikely, it's going to feel like they're boxing you into a corner. People like growing and having their New Year's resolutions that they control, so, that they've chosen.
So just to focus on that point, when a person, the more vague you are, leaves more room for personal expression?
Yes, for adults. When you're a child, I don't know if you're going to sit down and you're going to reflect. However, for adults, I feel like telling people how to become better might be a little condescending. Now, at the same time, you have to be inspiring to people. But these two ideas, or one idea that I'm going to present, they have a good middle way of being powerful and yet not telling people what to do.
Okay, go for it.
So as a bit of an intro, the way I was introducing this idea in Tel Aviv the other day on a rooftop, it was beautiful, thanks for organizing that, and thank you, Ben, for hosting it, is that we all live in two planes. One is like an arrow, one way. You're never going to be a toddler again. You will only ever once be 35.
Temporarily.
Yeah, one direction, one way street.
Okay.
You're not going backwards. On the other hand, we live in a circular year. We live in a circular seasons, our months, our years. It feels very circular. Even in ancient cultures, you had the circle and the circle of life, and life and death being very circular.
Nature. So nature being cyclical is also part of your life. So yes. Just to clarify your point, there's two aspects of your experience in life. There's one that you go through time, and then you're not going backwards. You have this sort of your temporal horizons. And then there's also the world you live in has a certain cyclical nature to it.
Exactly. And looking at that together, the ideal person will live in something resembling a spiral. So every year or every month, but let's take the year, every season, they'll go through a summer, they'll go through a Rosh Hashanah, they'll go through a Hanukkah, and hopefully, ideally, this Rosh Hashanah will be the same, but it won't be the same as last year. You'll be able to look at your previous Rosh Hashanah and see, I was there. Now I'm here. Where am I going to be on the next rung of my spiral? So on the one hand, you're always constantly moving, hopefully up. And on this other hand, it's always a circle. So together, that would be a spiral. So the question here is, how can we spiral upwards for our Rosh Hashanah this year?
So each stage of the spiral, as you clock on it, as you move around this circular motion, and you're moving up, every event gets sort of clocked in at a certain point.
Yes, and hopefully you're able to look back. When I teach my brides, my kalas, one thing that I always recommend is them buying a beautiful notebook. And every month, because the family purity laws are monthly, every month to jot down even just one sentence in their beautiful notebook of where was I last month, where am I this month? Just to clock in that I am growing. It's not just a never-ending cycle of just the same stuff.
I see. Okay, fine. So you've got this idea that you want to be able to track your progress.
Exactly. So the question that I wanted to focus on, that has always kind of amazed me, when you look at a group of people that are faced with their New Year's resolutions and everybody's talking about Rosh Hashanah and who are you going to be and life and death and all that, you have certain people that take on the world on their shoulders and they're going to be the best person this year and everything's going to change and this is going to be the year that everything goes for the good. And you have other people that don't do a thing. They just float through. And it's such a difference, such a stark difference in those two personalities. Why do you think you have such extreme reactions to the call of the shofar, the call to betterment? You have some people who just simply are too involved in their life, they don't care. And other people that take on everything, even too much.
Personality types. Certain personalities are more focused and certain personality types are obsessive. If you're obsessive, then you get into religion, you take it all on. And if you're more of a relaxed sort of personality and you don't have the push, then you'll take nothing on. I suppose both extremes are wrong.
I would say a relaxed personality might take a little bit on, but they don't. People don't usually take a little bit on unless they're taught to take a little bit on.
Okay.
So you can blame black and white thinking, or you can blame an all or nothing approach, which basically is the same thing. But I'd like to display a principle here, a philosophical principle, and then see if it might work with these personality types. That different personality types might fail to see this principle and thereby fall into the trap of too much or too little.
So to recap your point, you say we approach the world in this sort of spiral approach to life, moving but at the same time re-experiencing events in our lives. The example you gave with family purity and the idea that you can focus in not only on the years and the events in the years, but the idea of the month and the events that a woman experiences periodically during the month. In which case, when it comes to personality types, when we come to Rosh Hashanah and these times that are focused on self-reflection and change, you have two extremes that we generally speaking experience, especially in our students. You have the ones that go nuts and obsessively take on a huge amount, and the ones that are like,
eh.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Okay, and your goal is to transfer the extreme and the ear into some sort of healthy medium.
I would like to bring out a point, a philosophical Jewish point, and using this concept, the one who goes crazy might not go crazy, and the one who goes eh might not go eh.
Perfect.
Because obviously we all know that the healthy thing is to take on something small, something defined, realistic, time-bound. You know, SMART goals, S-M-A-R-T, which stands for specific, not vague, M, manageable, measurable. Are you actually going to be able to measure your success at all? Attainable, A is attainable. Can you do it? Are you in a situation where you can do it? R, realistic. Is it realistic for you right now? And T, which I think is very powerful, time bound. Do you actually have a start and end time for this? So the ideal goal is that, but people take either too much or too little. Now, when we want to discuss goals, we first have to discuss the concept of free will, that we are actually able to make decisions, that we're not robotrons marching through life without any decision-making abilities. And this is obviously a huge topic, but suffice it to say that without free will, Judaism would kind of go under. Where is reward and punishment? Where is closeness to God if we never chose it? However, the sages do teach us that there are certain things we don't have free will over. As a matter of fact, most things we don't have free will over. You can right now think of 5 things that you did not choose today and hundreds of thousands of things you never chose ever. Your parents, where you grew up, how much money you have is usually not up to you. So where is this middle path of our focus on free will, but at the same time there's so much we don't have free will on?
So you're going in the direction of focusing on where you do have control.
Correct. Now Rav Dessler made this structure called Nekudat HaBechira, or your choice point and your choice box. So imagine a spectrum.
Your choice box is actually quite cool.
Yeah, I like the choice box actually more than the choice point, because it involves your stretch points.
Yeah.
So imagine a spectrum. On the one hand is, cold-blooded murder, something that you couldn't do even if you were trying to do it. It's just too evil. And on the other side, something that's so saintly that you could look up to it maybe, but it's just way beyond you. You're somewhere in the middle. Your point of tension is somewhere in the middle. Around that point of tension, there's the box. Above it is stuff that's hard. It's holier than you, but you can manage. You can manage. Stuff that's below your point in the box is stuff that's easy for you, but not yet too easy that you couldn't slip. So let's just say Jim is a kleptomaniac, and he's always ever stolen from the local drugstore. It's never even occurred to him not to walk out with an extra pack of something. He then starts working on himself, and he has just now started not stealing out of the drugstore. It's just in his box of control. For that, he is getting major brownie points upstairs for. After a while, after 6 months of not stealing anymore, it's already easy for him. He might still get reward for it, But now his choice box has moved up. Now, that where he's struggling might be that if he finds money on the street to actually give it back, or something like that. So your choice box can move up when you work on yourself, or move down, like if you get addicted or if you meet a bunch of bad friends and you start slipping. Suddenly what was easy for you is no longer easy for you, in morality-wise. So your choice box is completely and utterly individual to you. Nobody can tell you what your choice box is, because only you know where you struggle.
So far, so good. So you're saying your choice box, this idea of the box of Bechira, has like, there's almost like a general spectrum and different boxes flow up and down this box, this spectrum. And but how does this relate to individuals' motivation to grow?
Right. So if you feel like you saw the light and we need to do teshuvah, we need to be a better person, you're not taking yourself with for the ride. Your choice box might not be it keeping everything 100%. So you're not doing yourself a service by taking on everything. Your choice box isn't there. You're not even supposed to be there. You're supposed to be working slowly towards it.
So your point is introspection is where your choice box is.
Introspection is the first step to knowing where your choice box is and then being able to take something on that actually is realistic. God put you in a certain place to have a certain choice box. And your choice is in that box, not to take on everything now and be a saint. That's denying your choice box, so it's denying where God put you.
It also actually destroys the concept of a saint.
Yeah, because a saint earned where they are. But then the other side is also true. If you don't do anything, you're also denying your choice box. Because you're saying, I can't do anything anyway.
So interesting. You're saying the point to the one who does nothing and the point to the one who's doing everything, the point you're saying to both of them is, you're ignoring the self. It's not that there's too much being demanded of the one who's doing nothing, or the one who's doing everything is demanding too much of themselves. You're saying they're ignoring the self. They're negating the self in this either lack of decision or in this too much decision. It's negation and the ignoring of the self, which if they do focus on the self, that's where their box comes into play.
And then the goals will become smart.
And then they'll be able to actually
do something. They won't crash and burn.
Okay, I like that.
And Revolbi says that the first thing you have to do when you want to grow is know yourself. He actually says something quite radical. If you take something upon yourself just for the sake of taking something upon yourself, better don't. You need to take something upon yourself to make yourself a better person because you know that that's a worthwhile thing to do.
Ben, you can only make yourself a better person if you know
yourself. Exactly.
So to recap this idea, you're saying that the two extremes in terms of growth, both of them unhealthy, either nothing or everything, and a way of encouraging both sides to find somewhere that's smart, growth will be not only make sense, but also will actually be transformative over time, is that if they both focus on the self, not so much about what they should or shouldn't do, the first step is focus on the self. Know where you are in reference to where you need to grow or where you could grow. And by focusing on the self, that's I think the core thing. The motivation here is to tell the person to focus on the self, which generally speaking sounds egotistical, but here it's to know where you are.
I mean, the best type of personal trainer doesn't just give you a bunch of heavy dumbbells and say, go do push-ups now or lift them or whatever. The best type of personal trainer takes your body type, your blood type, what you eat, your mood, and finds out what's the perfect workout schedule for you. That's hard. We're not saying it's easy, but it's just easy enough that you'll actually do it. That's what we're talking about. So you need to know the self first.
It's like that middle ground between not too boring, not too exciting, not too difficult, but difficult enough to keep you pushing yourself.
Get into the flow, yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
All right, thanks for listening.
Have a great week.